This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. We have awards to give out today during the Power Hour. We have a ton of guests. And Wes, there is all kinds of stuff going on, including right after the show at 10.05 a.m., The Exchange. A major power broke exchange between the Packer and Durham family. That's coming up right after the show today.
Yeah. For those of you that are just joining us, my mother has made Mark a pie.
Not a pie.
Yes.
The pie. Not a pie.
Well,
the pie. Yeah.
My grandmother used to make egg custard when I was a kid. And my mom grew up in Winston-Salem, full disclosure. My mom grew up in Winston-Salem. And so my summers and springs, and when my parents were traveling when I was a younger kid, I'd stay with my grandparents. And my grandmother got me hooked on egg custard. And so a couple of weeks ago, I was at home visiting my mom and doing an event with Commissioner Swofford and Commissioner Phillips. And that night for dinner, my mom fixed me a piece of egg custard, and I sent a picture of it to the Lumberjacks and to Pack. And next thing you know, Pack's decided he wants to try egg custard pie for the first time in his life.
That's right.
So my mom has agreed to make you, off the recipe that her mother used,
Miss Jean,
an egg custard pie.
Miss Jean, God bless you, Miss Jean.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today, right there off exit 33 at the Billy Graham Parkway, if you guys want to come by and witness this.
You're going to tell everybody?
I am going to tell everybody. I am telling
somebody from the Observer?
Whoever wants to show up, we're going to hook up right there at the Cracker Barrel. Off exit 33 on I-85, your brother and Miss Jean are bringing down the Sirius hardware. She's bringing you an egg custard pie. She made one for me, too, because she's a wonderful lady. And we're going to do the exchange. I'm going to give her
no doubt about that.
The infamous West Durham Elon fish, which will leave my basement.
And it's going
to sit right there so you can promote your school, who yesterday thanked the heavens above for flooding the area so they didn't have to get pounded by Elliott Avent and NC State in baseball. And so the fish is going over there to Miss Jean so she can take it down to you. And I get my first ever egg custard pie. And it goes right to the fridge.
And it's going
to go right to the fridge.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
The fish is going to sit right here in front of the Crew Cab Country Club license plate.
There we go. Exchange today right after the show.
Yeah. Otherwise, fairly calm, right? You're headed to, by the way, Emerson's graduation is official. I've been asked this a couple different times from people who watch or slash listen to the show. Emerson's graduation is tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning. That's why I will not be here tomorrow. I don't miss many shows, but I will not be here tomorrow because Emerson.
Rarely.
Emerson will walk the stage and say, hey, President Clements, it's been my honor. And he will say something nice to her and I will be cheering from the upper deck, screaming like a madman, saying, thank goodness, no more out-of-state tuitions.
A tear?
A tear of joy. It will be a tear of joy and happiness. And so tomorrow morning, by the time you get around the Power Hour, the festivities will begin for the ceremony for Miss Emerson Faith Packer to receive her diploma from Clemson University. So that's what we're doing.
Interesting that Emerson graduates tomorrow. Will Durham graduates next Wednesday from Kennesaw State University with his degree in business.
Excellent.
I'm very proud of him. He's done a marvelous job. And we'll have some exciting news down the road about him, too.
And by the way,
for this show.
And by the way, I would be remiss if I don't mention this now because I will not be here tomorrow. Not only is it a big day for Emerson, it's also a big day for Amy Packer because we celebrate our 26th wedding anniversary tomorrow. So it's and then we got Mother's Day this weekend. We got parties this weekend down in Clemson. It's a festive time. We've got a big guest going to join us Friday because the PGA Tour comes rolling into Charlotte this week.
Oh, a big guest.
We have a large guest, a gentleman that could match us Emmy for Emmy. Just saying. Could match us Emmy for Emmy.
No, he can. You're not going there.
Well, we got one. We're trying to get another one.
He would pass us.
Well, he might have more than us.
He would lap us.
But
he has more than us.
He may have a lot more than us.
That
would probably be true. But I tell you what, he doesn't have. He's not going to get a piece of Miss Jean's egg custard pie on Friday. I can tell you that right now.
Egg custard.
Because I'm going to see this mystery guest of ours after the show, and I am not sharing. Because I know I'm going to love this piece.
No, good.
I may have a piece during the show. That's how excited I am about Miss Jean's delivery today. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Just a couple of notes here before we tell you about the show. Jim Phillips yesterday visited Virginia Tech. This listening tour, his memory hit Blake James on yesterday, and Miami was his first stop. He was at Syracuse last week. Louisville the Friday before, Virginia Tech yesterday, and the commissioner is at Virginia today on the Cavalier campus talking to Carla Williams and the staff and the student athletes and all those things. So I think if I'm right, he's gotten a good bit of this done. I know Chapel Hill last week and so on and so forth. So, and the spring meetings are going to be held virtually, by the way, Pac. I think you knew that, where the spring ACC meetings are going to be done virtually. Which means that no more pink Himalayan sea salt for you, at least not yet.
That's terrible news. That was bad news. I like that road trip. When we went down and rubbed elbows as if we were somebody, and people don't think we're just valeting cars for all the ACC executives. No, we're here to work. Oh, yeah, here. You hand people their keys back. They thought we were valet for the movers and shakers in the league down there at that beautiful swank resort.
In fact, Drew and Josh will appreciate the first time we pulled up there, long before the network, we were just doing radio stuff, right?
Central only.
Up in the parking lot. We got out late afternoon, and a guy walked up and said, I mean, literally, not the, are you checking in, can I help you? It was, what are you guys doing here?
We got out of the car, and it was, what are you guys doing here? You knew instantly, because you and I rendezvoused and drove into this swank resort where the ACC was having their spring meetings. And we got out like, hey, Packer and Durham have arrived. And they looked at us like, man, you two idiots. Are you applying for a job here? Are you like, you're supposed to be back there, you know, I don't know, washing pots and pans? Cleaning silverware. Mm-hmm. What are you guys doing? Why are you here?
And then we found out. You found out about the pink Himalayan sea salt hand scrub
in the men's room.
They had the bathroom.
I swear, I almost stole the entire bowl, about 10-15 pounds, and it was pink Himalayan sea salt. And you were supposed to wash your hands with it. I'm like, all right, I'll try it. And, man, I fell in love with it. Then I realized they were selling, like, little bottles in the store for, like, $35. And I realized, well, there's got to be $10,000 worth of free Himalayan sea salt, pink Himalayan sea salt, out there in the men's room. And I'm telling you what, I've never gone to the men's room more often in my life. I didn't have to do anything but wash my hands. But it was awesome. I'm telling you. You know, when this COVID thing hit, the first thing I thought was, I want to go down there to that resort and go get all that Himalayan sea salt, because I swear to God, there won't be a germ on my hand for 4 years. Stuff was phenomenal. Almost wanted to eat it. It was so good.
Yeah.
By the way, one more thing. We've already wasted enough time. I want to say one thing about Commissioner Jim Phillips. I have enjoyed living vicariously on social media of Commissioner Phillips' travels throughout the ACC on his listening tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have really admired his tie game. Now, you know, I do not like ties. I don't like ties in sports. I don't like to wear a tie. I don't like anything about tie anything. Commissioner Phillips has the tie he wore at Virginia Tech was spectacular, because I didn't know how he was going to go, because the Hokies have a strange color combination, right? My wife's a Hokie. She even says, boy, our colors are strange. Virginia Tech's got a strange. I tell you what, Phillips pulled it off, man. The commissioner pulled off the tie. And so I almost want to rank his tie game And I wonder when he goes to Virginia, surely he doesn't wear the same tie he wore at Syracuse, right? Because you do have a couple combinations in this league. I think the commissioner is going to come up with something creative for Virginia. He has been spectacular with his tie game. Really good.
And by the way, he hasn't missed yet.
I know. He's hit a home run in every one of them. He's really been impressive with that. Just a subtle observation from afar.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk some football real quick.
We got plenty to go on the show today. Yep, we're going to one of the things we kind of got caught into, and you guys, you brought this to the table, I guess, a couple days ago, right? In the last 20 years with the ACC and the NFL draft, and its positions that have been drafted and the schools that lead in those positions, I think that'll catch people's eye here.
Yeah, it's not my idea. I saw a Pick Six previews that if you can follow online, does some really cool stats from time to time, things that we've used a lot. So I want to give a shout out to the Pick Six previews guys because they do a tremendous job of this. And so we got our experts to look a little bit deeper into it. And so the genesis of the idea wasn't our idea. So I just want to give that a heads up. But it was really a breakdown of the last 20 NFL drafts, right? Drafts. And how ACC teams have done in certain position groups, who's really succeeded. And it's kind of an interesting breakdown, Wes. And again, this is one of those kind of bar bet conversations you'd have with your buddies that you'd throw a guess out there. And you may be surprised by some of these numbers and the teams that lead.
Right. I think people were going to be very surprised to see the schools in certain positions. Now, I'll give you an example. Here's the rundown on this. And if you had to pick the last 20 NFL drafts and the current ACC school that's had the most players drafted at a specific position, the first one would probably surprise you. Maybe not, but I think it would. I think it would. You know one. But I don't think you're accounting for the other guys that have been in the league that have played that position. And that is Louisville they lead the current ACC roster of schools. The last 20 NFL drafts, they've had more quarterbacks drafted than anybody else.
I'm with you. There's a couple on here that really, really surprised me. And we're going to go through an offense and a defensive deal, breaking this down. But from an offensive standpoint, there is no doubt. Louisville at five, if you would have asked me that question, I would have been dead wrong. I would have not been in the neighborhood with that. And again, I know Louisville hasn't been in the ACC for the last 20 years. That's beside the point. You still got to produce players to the next level. And man, the Cards have done a really, really nice job with the man under center.
Yep. Really have. And I mean, Lamar Jackson, in all honesty, that's the easy one. Teddy Bridgewater, that'd be the other one. Aha, now we're getting down the line a little bit. Now we're getting down the line. Chris Redmond.
Jump.
You know, guys like that. Oh, wow. Every time you see it, right? Every time you see the play. Yeah, and a great call by Adam Amin on that night, too, by the way. So that's kind of where we're going to start with this today. We're going to go through positions. It's kind of an interesting – it's kind of an interesting deal, too, when you start digging into the details. As always, and as Pac said, the Pick Six preview guys kind of throw this out there. And then when you start thinking about it a little bit more and you go, huh, how about that?
Right.
I'll give you one, too. Running backs and wide receivers are interesting with Clemson and Miami. Real interesting.
I wasn't
just from the standpoint of how many guys.
I wasn't surprised with either one of those two. That one didn't pop out me. Quarterback jumped out at me because I would have been wrong if I would have guessed. And I just think it's ironic, too, that offensive linemen, Miami and Florida State are tied with 16. And I think about both those programs right now, and it's like if they're going to get back to where we all want them to from ACC perspective, because Miami and Florida State have to be good for this league, have to be good. Those are the two areas right now that, quite frankly, I just don't think they're there yet. Now, hopefully this year life is better for everybody, but it's kind of ironic that Miami, Florida State, two incredible programs, and from an offensive line perspective, have produced more NFL draftees than anybody else in the league. But yet right now, those to me are question marks that they've got to overcome to get to the next level, right? That offensive line.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We got some football. We got the big awards show coming up this morning at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. We are sworn to secrecy. We're not saying a word. We're batting 1,000, Wes. We are batting 1,000 at keeping our mouths shut.
On keeping quiet?
Yeah, and not screwing up any secrets. We have never butchered.
Oh, man.
We have never butchered. This is show 378 on television. We did 369 on radio before this nonsense started. Not one time have we screwed up. Ever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep that going. Yeah. Speaking of batting 1,000,
yeah.
Tell you what, there were some shots.
Ooh,
I mean, some shots yesterday. A big-time showdown. Vanderbilt, great program. Told you, Corby McDonald, those two dudes, they're as good as it comes, man. And they get after it yesterday for the barrel. And, man, there were some bombs.
Henry Davis homered. Luke Brown also went 2-for-4 at the plate. They've had 18 and 16 multi-hit games, respectively. Carter Lohman gave them a strong start in four frames. And Louisville beat Vanderbilt 7-2 at Jim Patterson.
It's gone.
And you mentioned that, that's way gone. There, that might hit the press box in the back of the football stadium. That's over the train track.
It hit. There was a train moving, by the way, down right field line that got hit. That was a shot. And if you've not seen some of the video angles of that, I mean, nobody moved. I mean, not a soul moved when that thing left the building. It was out of here. Big window for Louisville.
For those of you that don't know this, Tim Corbin and Dan McDonald not only are outstanding baseball coaches, they also understand the value of promotion and marketing with your programs. And they've created a series with Vanderbilt and Louisville. I mean, again, it's just up and down I-65 for both the Commodores and the Cardinals. And they play for the Battle of the Barrel.
Awesome.
And Louisville now leads the series, as you see on the screen, 5-4. And I just give these guys a lot of credit. The barrel symbolizes Tennessee whiskey, Kentucky bourbon. We can get behind that, Pack.
All day.
Vanderbilt won the 19 game. Last year, the game was postponed because of COVID, canceled. So that barrel has been sitting in Nashville for the last couple of years. However, Louisville took it back last night after winning it in 14, 16, 17, and 18. So congratulations to Mac and the Cards last night.
Best thing about it, loser drinks, and winner does too. I mean, who doesn't love that series? Right? Anything that has a battle of the barrel, we are all for that, especially when it involves anything with brown water. We are behind that 1,000,000,000%. And if the game, again, I'm going to emphasize this one more time, Wes. If that game next year could be scheduled somewhere around the Louisville spring football game, which I have suggested Saturday, April the 30th of 2022, why could we not do a battle of the barrel showdown in baseball? We do a Coach Satterfield Louisville spring football game, and we just hang around the great Commonwealth for a little horse racing. I'm just throwing that open for possible ideas. You guys got 1 year to figure it out, and I would think that the executives here at ACC Network would say, boy, you know, those Packer and Durham idiots, they've been talking about doing this now for about 3 years. Maybe we should just send them for the week up there in Louisville and promote the Atlantic Coast Conference, because, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
Right? Great baseball.
Get you some
football.
Burgoo.
That barrel, you may need to give me another barrel before I jump on whatever that food of the Commonwealth thing was. I've never had – I'm going to have that – listen, I'm going egg custard pie for the first time. Then I'll get to that Kentucky staple that you keep talking about. We'll worry about that later. Great win. So, that was a great win for Louisville.
Congratulations.
That's an important win.
Yep. It's a great win. Mm-hmm. They'll start a series with Duke this weekend. Duke beat William & Mary yesterday. Chris Pollard and the Blue Devils, 11-6 winners over William & Mary. I think they played that at Jack Coombs, by the way, on the Duke campus. Elsewhere. We need to do this too, by the way. Dan McDonald after the game.
Right.
He won the game. Let's emphasize, he won the game. But I think Mac's ready for some normal at Jim Patterson Stadium.
Preach it.
I'm ready to open this place up. I'm not going to lie. I'm beyond frustrated. I'm tired of it. We're an outdoor sport. I mean, let's go, people. Turn on the Masters. Watch the Derby. Watch the games in the SEC and in other ballparks. It's an outdoor sport. You want to risk it, you risk it. Like, I'm tired of playing games without people in the stands. So let's open it up, and let's let our fans come, and let's let them enjoy some Louisville baseball. And then I'll be a little more excited to host a regional because, unfortunately, I haven't had a regional atmosphere yet. Right? Do we not agree?
We agree. I agree.
No, we
listen,
agree. We agree.
I'm with them. I, you know, if you don't want to go, you don't have to go. But if you've been vaccinated and you're being smart, you're outdoors, go party. Listen, again, you got to be responsible. I think Coach is right. I do. I he is preaching to the choir, as far as I'm concerned. But that's that.
Louisville is 16-5, by the way, at home this year. And, yes, they would be in contention to be a potential regional site, assuming that things go well the rest of the season and on into the ACC Baseball Championship, which, by the way, is in Uptown Charlotte. As Blake James said yesterday, and I will follow this, every state and every municipality is going to be a little different here. How fast some bounce back, for instance, I know things are changing in the state of North Carolina where Mark is. They changed effective immediately last week in Georgia. Florida has been very flexible and open for the most part on several fronts for a while here, including parks and attractions and things like that coming back open. It's going to be interesting, Mark, as we kind of work our way through the summer schedule, where these states go in the ACC footprint and to what degree they go. Remember, John Wildhack even said last week they're optimistic in the state of New York, which has certainly been one of the more stringent states in the country. So and rightly so, because the virus was so hot there a year ago. I think it's one of the things we kind of got to watch here, but Max got a point. Why have a regional if you can't have crowds? And I get it. I get it.
He's 100% right. And, yeah, the states are going to operate at a different pace. It's been that way for the last 14 to 15 months when the pandemic hit us. But, you know, we haven't reached the finish line. We were making great progress. You can see light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, just I'll say this for the 800th time on this show. Be smart. You know, do your due diligence. And if you're not comfortable, you can stay home. And it's not against the law. But if you've gotten vaccinated and you're social distancing and wearing a mask and going about your business, hey, knock yourself out. I mean, you can't be hermits the rest of our lives. So, but you got to do the smart thing. You got to be responsible and move forward.
Yeah. Real quick before we get to break, the other ball game on the ACC slate that did get played last night, a tough night for Brian O'Connor and the Cavaliers of Virginia. VCU won its 12th straight, came back with four in the top of the ninth to beat the Cavaliers 7-5. They scored seven unanswered runs in the last three frames to win the game. Two-run homer got the Rams on the board and snapped Virginia's bullpen scoreless inning streak at 20 1/3. Two of the three runs in the seventh were unearned. And in the ninth, they sent nine batters to the plate, drew three walks. And unfortunately, that was against our guy, Steven Schock.
I know it.
So
he had a tough night. Tough night.
Yeah.
UMass beat BC. Yeah. So some good bad. They had some good and the bad yesterday in the baseball department. So, but a great win, though, for Louisville.
There you go.
Especially coming off a tough weekend. That was a big-time win against number two, Vandy.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Let's talk about women's soccer because the NCAA tournament gets going again, and we keep bragging about this league when it comes to men's and women's soccer. Five teams on each side are still alive and kicking, and Jonathan Yardley is kind enough to rejoin the program from a couple weeks ago. Even though I do not care for the attire today, and that is not going to work when we got UVA fans watching. No, Jonathan is here for his last appearance on Packer and Durham. So, Jonathan, what's happening? You doing all right?
I am, you guys. I told you the road to the College Cup goes through the Rice Owls. We don't get to the Sweet 16 every day. So when we do, I got to go big. This is almost unprecedented all for right. Rice athletics, let alone right. Rice soccer.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate the loyalty. All However, right. we're going to give you an ACC slant on these five matches today.
Yeah, but, there you know, it goes. We gotta keep, get ready.
There nice it is. Job. Now we'll bring you back. You know, let's start with that game. Let's start with that match. Virginia and Rice. You talked about the unexpectedness from a Rice perspective. What about Virginia's approach with this showdown?
Yeah, I think Virginia's in a great spot. I mean, this is the most wide open part of the bracket. They beat BYU, who was the 12 seed, and Rice upset West Virginia, who was the 5 seed. West Virginia had already beaten Virginia head-to-head this year. Virginia's in a great spot. I mean, they're heavy favorites to beat Rice. Trust me. West Virginia outshot Rice 20-1. Virginia's going to outshoot him by more than that, is my guess. And then you would look at the potential Elite Eight against TCU or Georgetown. Both good teams, but both beatable. Alexis Spanstra is on fire. She's got 4 goals in 2 games in the tournament. It's really a dynamic attack. And Laurel Ivory was terrific in goal against BYU. So I think they've had a couple bit of slow starts in the tournament. They gave up the first goal to SIU. So if they can get through the first 20 minutes and not fall behind against Rice, which is really good defensively, I think Virginia's going to be okay. We could see him in the College Cup again as an unseeded team.
Wow. The irony of Virginia's run here coincides with what Florida State and Carolina, and let's use Duke here, right? Let's throw Duke into the mix. The Blue Devils have played very well. Clemson and Virginia maybe face a steeper hill, but amazing Duke beats Arizona State the other night just on the bump of Sophie Jones, who was with us on the show yesterday. Little things like that, the old survive and advance, Jonathan.
Yeah, Sophie Jones is one of the greats in ACC soccer, got the game winner. You had the Graham sisters setting up the goals. I think that's the first game today, and that's a really interesting one. Ole Miss has a hot goalkeeper. They've gotten there by winning 2 shootouts. Don't mess with Ashley Orcus on penalty kicks. She's saving better than half of them. But for Duke, if they can find the finishing, and that's kind of always been the if for them, they are dangerous. They get, again, this is a really advantageous matchup for them, nothing against Ole Miss. But Ole Miss is another team that's not typically here. They're not typically in the quarterfinals. Duke is now the favorite on paper to win this game because Ole Miss upset USC. And then you're talking either Florida State or Penn State in the quarterfinals. There's a lot of work to be done. But Duke is in a good place, especially if Mia Jow is healthy and they can keep Delaney Graham in the attack.
Florida State is the number one seed, the top seed. It was kind of cool just to see them play again since it's been a while. But you just know that Mark Kerkorian's got a great team, tons of talent, played a bunch of professional squads in the spring, took care of business in the first go-round, but now they get Penn State.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about it. They're the number one seed in the field. They're unbeaten. And they probably have the toughest Sweet 16 matchup. Somehow, the Big Ten went totally underseeded. They didn't play any non-conference games, just played in the spring. Penn State, y'all, is really good. And they have Sam Coffey in the midfield, who, when she was with Boston College, gave Florida State trouble. So this is a tough matchup. Florida State looked a little rusty against Milwaukee. It was 0-0 at halftime. They had all of the ball. They only gave up 1 shot on the day. And they took out a defender. They moved Emily Madrill, who's normally a center back, played her at wing for the first 10 minutes of the second half just to try and get some offense. And, of course, they found it. A couple of set-piece goals. Jalen Howell goes up her 90, and you're good to go. So you hope that rhythm gets them ready for a much stiffer test. I mean, that might be the game of the day. Florida State and Penn State, usually you're seeing that at the College Cup, at least in the quarterfinals. We get it in the Sweet 16. So that is actually a spot of concern for Mark Kerkorian and Florida State.
All right, we mentioned Carolina-Washington. That's another one of these matchups. We'll get to what Clemson and Virginia have. We'll get to what Clemson has here in a moment. We've already talked about Virginia and that kind of thing. But when you look at Carolina and where they are, they should win, right?
They should. It's a lot easier said than done. Washington is a good team. You know Pac-12 teams deal with a lot, right? Stanford is not here because teams like Washington beat them during the regular season. North Carolina is not 100%. Macy Bell has been out. They've had to move Brianna Pinto, who's tremendous, up to forward to try and find more offense. and they're not quite as deep, right? Anson doesn't run a full 11 new players out in the second half now. It's 6, 5, 7, kind of depending on the feel of the game. And they did make an impact in North Carolina's first or second round win over Denver. But I think this is a tougher test. I think they get through, and then their quarterfinal would be either Texas A&M or Oklahoma State, who put up 7 in their second round win. So that's that, I think, is where the test comes for North Carolina. I think today should be a W, but again, this has been a kind of more unpredictable tournament than we've seen in some years already.
Clemson has an uphill battle. They take on number 3 UCLA, a little West Coast versus the upstate of South Carolina in the backyard of North Carolina, which is kind of unique. What about the Bruins and the Tigers?
Yeah, it's a big challenge for Clemson, I tell you. They lost Hal Hirschfeld in the first half of their previous game. I don't know if she's available. Look, Clemson's playing just fine right now, but UCLA is really good. They're one of the favorites, number 3 seed for a reason. They left it late against Iowa. They trailed the whole game and scored 2 goals in the last 5 minutes to win. So, again, that recipe, get out in front early. Look, Clemson has surprised people this year. Their biggest win was 3-0 over Virginia way back in the fall. Since then, it's kind of been beat the teams you should beat and lose to Florida State and North Carolina, which is what you would expect. You know, again, if you get to penalty kicks, which is how they got through against Rutgers, that's absolutely a decent result for Clemson today, and you take your chances in a shootout. Again, UCLA is vulnerable, and that would be a huge shock to get Clemson into the quarterfinals. That program is really trying to grow, and this is one of those opportunities, right, that these players are so excited for.
All right, Jonathan, let's flip here to the men's side, because Pittsburgh gets Central Florida, Carolina Stanford, Clemson Marshall, Wake Kentucky, Virginia Tech, Seton Hall. Who do we need to keep an eye on there? Who do you like? Who do you think maybe is going uphill in the fight?
I mean, Seton Hall's having a great year, number 6 team in the country. I haven't seen him out of the Big East, but I think Virginia Tech was on the back foot at times against Oregon State. On the other hand, Virginia Tech's pretty comfortable with that. So, you know, that's one to watch. And I think Kentucky can be dangerous for Wake Forest. But, I mean, Omar Hernandez, the goals he had in the round 2 win for Wake Forest were really impressive. So I like Wake to come through there. And I think the favorites hold. You know, I know you had Dallin on, and he was watching the Clemson game closely, and they got really tested by falling behind early. But as far as the flow of the game, they looked pretty comfortable. Obviously, Pitt had the goals. UCF is a big test compared to a Monmouth. Nothing against my Jersey boys. I think UCF is a big test for Pitt. And again, that's a team, so many steps that they're taking are the first time they've done that. And this is an experienced group. They've played together all year, but that's kind of a game I'd be concerned about, is UCF. Maybe I'm wrong and Pitt will put up 6 on somebody again. But those games tomorrow are definitely interesting to watch and are going to be tight.
Jonathan, so of the 10 ACC soccer teams that are still alive and playing in the NCAA tournament, 5 for the ladies today, 5 for the men tomorrow, what would be a reasonable win total for the league? As when you get out of bed Friday morning, the amount of ACC teams still left in the NCAA tournament, if you went over and under, would be what? What would you guess?
Probably I'd set it at 7.5 and I'd take the over. I mean, I think Clemson can't be considered the favorite, and I think Virginia Tech can't be considered the favorite. And, you know, you kind of expect maybe there's an upset somewhere here. So that's why I would put it in the 7 or 8 range. I mean, really, it should be an ACC-heavy quarterfinals. Emphasis, of course, being on should. But I think you're going to see a lot of representation.
Okay. Fair enough. You're the expert. And I'll tell you what, if you're
Yardley,
you're right, we'll bring you back.
Quick over-under number.
I like that, though. If you, I'll tell you what, after the Rice nonsense, if Jonathan's right, we'll bring him back. How about that?
Hey, I told Lori Lindsay, one of the many Virginia alumni I work with as a partner, I said, what are you going to talk about if Rice wins? And she said, if Rice wins, I'm never going on another appearance for the next couple of weeks. So I get to take Lori's schedule if Rice wins.
Fair enough.
So that's a pretty good incentive.
Yeah,
that's a good deal.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Nice job
on your
like
part. That, yeah, that's a good move. Yeah. I like that one. That's good.
All right. Jonathan, thanks. Be well. Appreciate it as always.
Enjoy the games, guys. We're looking forward to it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right, Wes, in case you missed it, fun day yesterday with a bunch of different student athletes.
Oh, man. I tell you what, we hit the gamut when we had Abby Sweet of Notre Dame softball and then Stephen Schock back-to-back in the 8 o'clock hour. And Stephen's a great personality, as a closer in baseball should be, right, Pack? Fun to talk to. We had a really nice visit. And we started by saying, hey, wait a second now. You got to have this mentality when you get in the ball game. How does it set up for you?
It's a little all over the place. So I kind of tend to keep it pretty loose for about the first six innings of a game. I like to just, you know, sometimes goof off and have fun, but obviously I'm still locked into the situation. And if the game is pretty tight or it's looking like it's going to be tight in the sixth, seventh inning, that's when I start kind of shifting, talk less to my teammates and just kind of focus on the mission at hand, getting stretched out, getting ready. And then, you know, I'll get ready. I'll throw my bullpen to just get loose before I come in. And then as soon as the bullpen gate opens, it's just all red. I mean, like I was saying about the Virginia Tech series, I couldn't really hear a word that was being said to me from the stands or anything like that. Florida State was a little bit louder and a little bit more coordinated in what they were saying. So sometimes I heard things they were saying, but it wasn't really anything too harsh or anything I hadn't heard before. And so, you know, I get in there, I see red, I look at Logan or Kyle's mitt, and I just try to throw it to their mitt the best of my ability. And, you know, and most times in pitching, you're gonna be more successful than the hitter. I mean, hitting's a game of failure, so I just trust that, realize that if you're a gambling man, I don't know if I am or not, depending on what the NCAA wants me to say to that. But I know that the house is always going to win. And when you're a pitcher, you're the house right there. So I just trust that, trust the numbers, go for it.
Steven, you seem, again, we've never met, any of us. This is our first conversation, yep. Your debut on the show. It seems to me, though, given your experience and how effective you are coming out of the pen, that you seem to be a guy that probably would feast on the visitors giving you the business a little bit, right? You just seem like you got that personality. Oh, yeah, that's real cute. Like, I've not heard that before. Yeah, I tell you what, you better hope I don't get on the mound, because if so, we're mowing these dudes down. One, two, three, and y'all can go back home, right? You just seem to be the guy that, you know what, you guys can throw stuff at me. You can bark at me all you want. I eat that up. You just seem that way to me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if one of the Virginia Tech fans came out and punched me in the face while I was on the mound, their biggest regret from that would be the fact that it's just going to make me a better pitcher. So people will say what they want, and they'll call me stupid on Twitter. I really don't care. I mean, I'm about to have a master's degree from one of the best institutions in America, so I'm not really too concerned about the opinion of them. But it's just all about going out there and hanging up zeros, regardless of what people are saying. I mean, the thing I don't like the most is when fans aren't very creative. Like Florida State, they were very creative, calling me different things in the bullpen warming up. But, you know, I live off that. That's very funny stuff to me. But if you're just saying cuss words, it's like, eh, yeah, that's kind of boring.
Low hanging fruit.
Don't come out flat.
Come on. That's it.
Yeah, I'm not going to come out flat against y'all, so don't come out flat against me, you know?
I love
respect.
I love what you just said. Yeah, you can rag me all you want from Twitter. That's cool, and I'm an idiot. But guess what? I'm so stupid, I'm getting ready to get a master's from one of the great academic institutions. So Merry Christmas and God bless you. That is a great answer. I mean, absolutely great answer. I love that.
Take me through, and I know you're working with Coach Dickinson now. Carl Kuhn was there for several years prior to that with Brian. Take me through the mentality of closing at Virginia and what they talked to you about. And, I mean, I'm sure you did it in the past in high school. I mean, you went through a season where you were 0.00. So what's it mean now at the collegiate level, and what have they taught you about the art of closing?
Yeah, so it's always pretty much been the same thing for me. Even in high school during that zero ERA season, I knew that my skill set and everything like that, I was going to be a relief pitcher or a closer when I got to college. So it wasn't about, hey, hang seven zeros up on the scoreboard, throughout your start. It was just, hey, close every inning. You know, go out there and compete the best of your ability and make sure, you know, the other team's not touching home plate. And when they do, take it pretty personally. So luckily that year there wasn't too many personal insults to my name. But especially here at Virginia, one of the main things that Coach Drew emphasizes is just going out there and competing. Like, you only get one shot each game if you're lucky enough to get a shot to go out there and compete. So you might as well thrive in it, and you might as well do it to the best of your ability. So, you know, whether we're up one in a, you know, potential season-determining game, I'm going to take that the same way as we're up 20 or, I don't know, some random score here. Let me pull it out, like 18 to 1 or something like that, if that were to happen. I'm going to take that as seriously each time, you know.
Oh, that, you must have had a good time with that crew in Hokie Land just to pop a 18 to 1 out of nowhere. I wonder where that number came from. I mean, you are it's something else, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes I just see them.
Hey, I know. I hear you. I'm reading between the lines there, too. We got some video you totally composed after a close. Can we show that real quick? Do we have that for Steven?
Yeah, this is this is good. Here we go. I like this.
Here we go.
I think I'm trying to remember what I was saying. I think I was saying I love baseball or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. I want to go. I want to go feed my dogs. And look at this move. What was that move right there? What was that?
Right there. There was a spider on my glove, and I don't like spiders at all. So I said goodbye, spider. Had to get rid of that.
I know you had a tough night last night. Completely transparent. He did not have a great night last night, but he has been tremendous all season long, and he was a fun dude to talk to yesterday. I hope we get him back. He was great.
Yeah, he was delightful and fun to visit with. He and Abby Sweet. We had Sophie Jones yesterday from Duke Soccer. Pac always tells you, student-athletes are the stars of the show. Well, I mean, stars of the show.
And the dogs. And Clifford. When Clifford decides to quit messing with birds and decides to come in and ruin the set down there in Cartersville.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.